Senator Kerry, suppose you were speaking with a voter who believed abortion is murder, and the voter asked for reassurance that his or her tax dollars would not go to support abortion. What would you say to that person?
That was a question asked by Sarah Degenhardt at last Friday's presidential debate at Washington University here in St. Louis. If you were watching the debate, that was the point at which my ears perked up. That was the point at which I started listening intently. There had been a question, I think, somewhere in the same neighborhood in that time of the debate that we'll talk about a little bit later during this third hour of Open Lines of issues, etc., having to do with embryonic stem cell research. We're going to hear Kerry's response to that question and the interchange at the debate on both of those questions during this third hour of issues, etc. It's Open Lines. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I want to hear from you on these particular candidates' answers to the questions that we're going to be playing for you from the presidential debate. I actually mentioned this during Bible class yesterday at church, not so much to talk about the candidates, but to talk about the issue of abortion and embryonic stem cell research. And I contrasted it with a well, we did this last week. Remember the? Do you remember the Rick Warren interview with NBC's Dateline Sunday night? And Rick Warren said he doesn't talk about abortion because it's a political issue. Boom. Well, Senator John Kerry said on Friday night that he doesn't talk about the life of the unborn embryo because he considers that or legislate against taking that life in embryonic stem cell research because he considers it an article of faith. And I said, look at the contrast here. Here's a preacher who won't talk about abortion because it's a political issue. Here's a politician who won't talk about abortion, in effect, because it's a theological issue. Who's going to talk about it? We're going to talk about it during this hour. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I want your reaction to how these candidates dealt with abortion and the stem cell research questions during the presidential debates. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. First of all, let me say that I was delighted that these questions were asked. And I must commend Charlie Gibson, the moderator at the debate, who chose every question from among all the questions that were written by the undecided voters in attendance at the town hall debate. He chose these, and he chose these questions, and I'm glad that he picked them. That it shows that we had a broad issue debate, and it would have been a major loss for these debates to pass without these two questions being dealt with by the opposing candidates. I'd like your reaction to this. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's get Senator Kerry's response to that question we just heard.
I would say to that person exactly what I will say to you right now. First of all, I cannot tell you how deeply I respect the belief about life and when it begins. I'm a Catholic. Raised a Catholic, I was an altar boy. Religion has been a huge part of my life, helped lead me through a war, leads me today. But I can't take what is an article of faith for me and legislate it for someone who doesn't share that article of faith, whether they be agnostic, atheist, Jew, Protestant, whatever. I can't do that. But I can counsel people. I can talk reasonably about life and about responsibility. I can talk to people, as my wife Teresa does, about making other choices and about abstinence and about all these other things that we ought to do as a responsible society. But as a president, I have to represent all the people in the nation, and I have to make that judgment. Now, I believe that that you can take that position and not be pro-abortion. But you have to afford people their constitutional rights. And that means being smart about allowing people to be fully educated, to know what their options are in life, and making certain that you don't deny a poor person the right to be able to have whatever the Constitution affords them if they can't afford it otherwise. That's why I think it's important. That's why I think it's important for the United States, for instance, not to have this rigid ideological restriction on helping families around the world to be able to make a smart decision about family planning. You'll help prevent AIDS. You'll help prevent unwanted children, unwanted pregnancies. You'll actually do a better job, I think, of passing on the moral responsibility that is expressed in your question, and I truly respect it.
Mr. President, minute and a half.
Trying to decipher that. My answer is we're not going to spend federal taxpayers' money on abortion. This is an issue that divides America, but certainly reasonable people can agree on how to reduce abortions in America. I signed the ban on partial birth abortion. It's a brutal practice. It's one way to help reduce abortions. My opponent voted against the ban. I think there ought to be parental notification laws. He's against them. I signed a bill called the Unborn Victims of Violence Act. In other words, if you're a mom and you're pregnant, you get killed, the murderer gets tried for two cases, not just one. My opponent was against that. These are reasonable ways to help promote a culture of life in America. I think it is a worthy goal in America to have every child protected by law and welcomed in life. I also think we ought to continue to have good adoption law as an alternative to abortion. And we need to promote maternity group homes, which my administration has done. Culture of life is really important for a country to have if it's going to be a hospitable society. Thank you.
Senator, you want to follow up? 30 seconds.
Well, again, the president just said categorically, my opponent's against this, my opponent's against that. You know, it's just not that simple. No, I'm not. I'm against the partial birth abortion, but you've got to have an exception for the life of the mother and the health of the mother under the strictest test of bodily injury to the mother. Secondly, with respect to parental notification, I'm not going to require a 16 or 17-year-old kid who's been raped by her father and who's pregnant to have to notify her father. So you got to have a judicial intervention. And because they didn't have a judicial intervention where she could go somewhere and get help, I voted against it. It's never quite as simple as the president wants you to believe.
And 30 seconds, Mr. President.
Well, it's pretty simple when they say, are you for a ban on partial birth abortion? Yes or no? And he was given a chance to vote. And he voted no. And that's just the way it is. That's a vote. It came right up. It's clear for everybody to see. And as I said, you can run, but you can't hide. It's the reality.
That's President Bush and his response. You heard the whole interchange there. I want to hear from you on this. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. That was but one of, I thought, two pertinent questions during the presidential debate on the issue of life. The next one, embryonic stem cell research, we'll hear in just a few minutes. But I want to hear from you on this issue of abortion. A lot of things were brought up there about taxpayer money going for abortions, partial birth abortion, exceptions for the life of the mother, parental notification. Golly, I mean, I don't think I could have scripted that to bring in all the issues any better than they were brought in by both of the candidates. What did you make of it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's start with Andy, who's calling from Kirkwood. Andy, thanks for being patient. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello, Todd. First, before I talk about the debate, I wanted to thank you and all the staff at KFUO for helping to promote the evolution controversy meeting that we had last weekend. Really do appreciate your help on that.
Happy to do it.
The first thing I would say was I was very, very pleased with the way the questions were phrased. They didn't allow a lot of wiggle room, and especially the one that the lady had asked on embryonic stem cell research. She really laid it on the line, and I imagine you'll be playing that later. I thought that President Bush did a wonderful job in responding to these two questions. I am one of these undecided voters, however, because there are so many other things about his policies that I disagree with. But, boy, he sure is right on this one. Thank you.
Andy, thank you very much. So Andy appreciates the way the questions were phrased. That actually raises another question in my mind. As you're reacting to the candidates' responses to these questions on abortion and embryonic stem cell research later, what question would you have asked? If you thought the question wasn't well phrased, how would you have phrased it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Mark's up next. He calls from his car. Mark, welcome.
Hi, Pastor Todd.
Hi.
I thought I was real happy with President Bush's response. However, I do wish he would have addressed the partial birth abortion, debate from the perspective that there really is no medical reason for partial birth abortion. It's basically a three-day procedure. So if there is a medical intervention needed, the partial birth abortion procedure is not an option.
I suspect the president was trying to keep it simple, Mark, because, there was an opening there for him when Senator Kerry talked about an exception for the life of the mother, and that's why he voted against it, for him to say if a child is brought almost a full term, a woman who can bear a child almost a full term and under very unusual circumstances have this child induced and labor-induced until the child's head is the only thing left in the birth canal, how does giving birth to a full-term child threaten her health? Of course, that's the kind of detail politicians don't generally go into. Mark, thank you very much for your question. Excellent, excellent observation. Pat is up next, calling from St. Louis. Pat, welcome.
Hello there. I am so glad for your program today.
Thank you.
Because I just could not get over listening to John Kerry. The president, I thought, was excellent on his answers. He was precise and clear. He didn't need to go into great detail, but Senator Kerry went in and he was all over the board covering every aspect. He cannot be for, you know, for life and then say that he knows it's terrible. Abortion is terrible, but the right for a mother to choose and, you know, for her health. And I have listened to doctors and even asked my own doctor, and me being a grandmother, and giving, you know, birth myself, I know that there would be more harm to the mother in partial birth abortion than if she would have delivered the baby. And there is absolutely no reason, unless that there was, it would be very catastrophic or something, you know, like she had a blood condition or something like that, or a heart condition or something like that, that they would have to take the baby and they would do it C-section, they wouldn't do partial birth abortion because it would probably kill her.
Pat, that is an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up. Let me ask you a question before I let you leave, and that is, were you disappointed that President Bush did not make the case on the central question of who is the unborn?
No, I thought that he did that quite well because he said that, I thought he said that.
Well, the two men seem to be in general agreement, because what Kerry began his answer by saying, look, I respect the belief about life and when it begins. He didn't say he necessarily agreed with it, but he has on previous occasions said that he believes life begins at conception. Now, if the two men were basically in agreement that life begins at conception, but they were just arguing over whether that life is worth protecting, that's one thing. I did not, for one, hear the president make a clear case that he does believe life begins at conception, that the unborn is a fully protected human life, a fully protected person. Pat, thank you so much for your call. Frank is on the line. He calls from his car. Frank, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to follow up on your comments about the lack of clarity from the president, with which I thoroughly agree. For example, he gave the impression that while he opposes abortion, the government under his leadership would not spend any money for abortion, and that, of course, is not true because our tax dollars are used to fund Planned Parenthood. Also under Title 10, I believe, the Medicaid legislation, abortions are funded by tax dollars. So he was seriously misleading the public, either intentionally or not, with that statement. Furthermore, the inclination to be proud of the partial birth abortion bill is misleading as well, because all that does is outlaw a particular method. It does not outlaw the murder of the baby in the third trimester by other means right up until the time of delivery. And also in the bill is the affirmation of Roe versus Wade, which in effect codifies an illicit 30-year-old decision. And our president signed that bill. I'll listen for your response. Thank you for taking my call.
And thank you, Frank. Excellent to hear these kind of responses to the presidential debate. And, you know, one wishes you could have a guy like Frank to sit there in the debate hall and follow up. Of course, there aren't really follow-ups in these various fora for presidential debate. But if you could have a Frank sitting out there saying, look, on the issue of tax-funded abortion, you know what I immediately thought of? What about the federal funding for embryonic stem cell research, which is abortion in a test tube or abortion in a frozen embryo chamber? It's not taking place in the womb, but it's taking place outside the womb. The victim of abortion is precisely the same, the unborn. Well, there is federal funding for that, even though those embryos had been previously destroyed. One might call that also federal funding for abortion. And he mentions Title X as well. Now, we should know that what Frank said there about the partial birth abortion ban is absolutely true. In order to get this thing passed, it had to include a provision that said Roe v. Wade is A-OK, and that the majority voting for this affirmed Roe v. Wade. So it was a mixed message at the very least, and Frank is right. It bans only a technique, not the actual murder of the child in the third trimester or whenever a partial birth abortion would be performed. Kind of like saying you can kill people, but you can't shoot them in the head. But you can shoot them in the body. But shooting in the head's illegal. You're banning a technique of murder rather than murder itself. What about the rest of you? How do you think the two candidates dealt with the abortion issue Friday night during the debate here in St. Louis? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Kathy's up next, calling from St. Charles. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was right away offended by the way Kerry immediately took it to be a faith issue. He didn't take any of the other issues as being faith-based issues. And I guess because I look at it as life issue, to me, you know, than any moral law, murdering someone who would break into your home and trying to, you know, kill you or your family, he would maybe consider that a faith-based issue and shouldn't regulate that either. So, you know, that was, I think, you know, not very wise on his part. But I also don't think Bush very well described the difference. And I've always been disappointed in Bush's softness with these life issues. He is not coming out hard on them, and it's a perfect opportunity to show the difference between the candidates and not try to blend the middle so much.
Well, Kathy, thank you. We do. I'm just one of these kind of days shows you that we have one of the most intelligent audiences in Christian radio, period. Now, a couple things here. The fact that that Senator Kerry did frame this as a faith issue, or as he put it, an article of faith. And Kathy rightly points out, none of the other issues that they dealt with there did he frame as an article of faith. I can't legislate what is an article of faith for me, he said, and impose it on other people, people who may not be Roman Catholic or may be non-religious or maybe of other religious persuasions. One of the questions I asked yesterday in the Bible class was, I wrote, thou shalt not kill, up on the wall or on the blackboard. And I said, is this an article of faith? You know what, folks? It isn't. Killing is wrong. Even if it didn't say in the Bible, you shall not kill, it would still be wrong. The law would be written in our hearts. The Ten Commandments that say, among other things, you shall not kill, are an exact replica of the law that God has written in the hearts of every man, believer and unbeliever. That means thou shalt kill is not an article of faith. It's a fact of our created being. God wrote into our hearts his will, perfectly reflected in the Ten Commandments. Now, can you find thou shalt not kill in the Bible? Of course you can. But that doesn't make it an article of faith. Moreover, when life begins is not an article of faith. It's a fact of science. When life begins, one might believe that life begins when one blows up a pink balloon. That might be an article of faith. Can we test it with science and discover it's not true? Yes. One might believe that life begins at conception. And one might believe that based either upon the fact that Scripture seems to strongly indicate that life begins at conception. I guess you might call that an article of faith. Or upon the fact the demonstrable fact that life begins at conception. When life begins is a fact of science, not an article of faith. Now, you can see what Senator Kerry was attempting to do. He was attempting to say, because it's an article of faith, it would be wrong for me to impose my morality on others. Well, let's go back to thou shalt not kill. Do we believe that it is wrong to shoot someone without cause and kill them? It would call murder. Yes. Well, what's to stop me, if I'm running for office, to say, look, I'm a Christian. I have been my whole life. But I can't take what is an article of faith for me, you shall not kill, and impose it on other people. You know, I could use the same logic to argue against all laws forbidding murder and manslaughter and other forms of killing. I could, if I were willing to take it and say, it's an article of faith for me, and it would be wrong for me to impose that. It's another way of saying you can't impose or you can't legislate morality. Folks, if we can't legislate morality, we can't legislate anything. Morality in terms of its behavior, not in terms of how we think or feel about what is right and wrong. You can't legislate what people think is wrong. You can legislate what people do. And in that sense, if you're going to legislate, you have to legislate morality. Do we have enough time to go to this cut on embryonic stem cell research? Then let's do that. The next question that I found very interesting was the question on embryonic stem cell research.
Senator Kerry, thousands of people have already been cured or treated by the use of adult stem cells or umbilical cord stem cells. However, no one has been cured by using embryonic stem cells. Wouldn't it be wise to use stem cells obtained without the destruction of an embryo?
That was Elizabeth Long's question at Friday night's presidential debate. We'll hear Senator Kerry and President Bush answer that question after this break. I'd like your reaction to the answers given there in this presidential debate. How do you think the senator answered when he gave his position on both abortion and embryonic stem cell research? And the president, both were given a full opportunity to deal with these two questions. I was almost immediately on the phone to my producer. His phone was busy for the next 45 minutes, so I eventually gave up. But I thought I wasn't expecting it, to be quite honest. I guess my expectations for the whole political debate were quite low. I didn't expect either question to come up, and to have both of them come up, embryonic stem cell research and abortion, I was amazed. Do you think that the president answered rightly? We've had a couple call and say, look, I'm glad to hear the president say what he said, but I wish he could articulate it a little more strongly. I wish he would articulate it a little more strongly. Or maybe, perhaps, you agree with Senator Kerry. Give me a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Something we've got to come back to a little bit later is his example of a 16 or 17-year-old girl being raped by her father. In answer to the question of whether or not there should be exceptions in the whole abortion law, he says, look, I can't tell that such a woman that she has to notify her father. I want to answer that a little bit later in Open Lines.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
While the Reformation was primarily a theological movement, a return to the centrality of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Reformation was also a cultural movement. Among other things, it signaled the beginning of democracy, the birth of the modern German language, and the Reformation triggered cultural conflict for almost a century afterward. If you'd like to study the Reformation in greater detail, you need our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for October, The Renaissance and Reformation Movements. The two-volume set is $40.99. Each book is $23.99. Go to our Issues, Etc. website and browse before you buy, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section or call to order the books from Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. When you call, mention Issues, Etc. issuesetc.org.
Abraham Lincoln, he was my relative.
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the challenging book, Genesis and the Decay of the Nations. Oh, come on, Ken, you're serious? You're related to Abraham Lincoln?
You know, I've had many people tell me I look like Abraham Lincoln, and I've often had people stop me on the street and say, "Did you know you look like Abe Lincoln?" I then say, "Well, yes, he's one of my relatives." And they often reply in a surprised tone, "You're related to Abraham Lincoln?" I then say, "Sure I am. Isn't everyone?" Now, that stops them for a minute. What do I mean? Actually, this is a great way to start a conversation to explain that all human beings are related to each other because we're all descendants of Noah and back to the first man, Adam. This then enables me to talk about the fact that because the first man, Adam, sinned, that's why all of us are sinners and alienated from God. That's why God stepped into history in the person of his Son to be our relative. So as a perfect man, but God, he could pay the penalty for our sin by dying and being raised from the dead. When people tell me they're praying for their lost relatives, I remind them, well, there's around 6 billion of them, so pray long and hard.
In a free booklet, Ken Ham looks at how science and scripture agree on the origin of the different races or people groups. Well, the booklet's available free when you go to AnswersRadio.com. All sorts of answers to your questions are right there at AnswersRadio.com.
This is Dr. John Tape with the Media Minute. Psychologists tell us that children formulate their moral values by repetitive observations. In other words, if a child sees something often enough, he will start believing that's the way it should be. This is why it is important to know what your children are watching on TV. TV often teaches that happiness comes from material possessions, violence is glamorous, and sexual immorality is a valid lifestyle. When you are watching TV with your children, don't let these themes that are contrary to our Christian values slip by without comment. Remind your children that Jesus died to give us a better way of life, one that is characterized by peace, joy, and sexual purity. This Media Minute is brought to you by the Christian Media Literacy Institute. Please visit our website at cmli.org.
Do you want more of God's grace? Bethany Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights is a Bible-believing church, faithful to the Scriptures, a place for the whole family, a community gathered around Christ that cares with a vibrant historic Christian liturgy. Bethany Lutheran Church is located at 5600 Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights. Visit them at www.bethanylcms.org. Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., the Age of the Reformation and the Empire in Crisis. This almost sounds like the Star Wars trilogy there. No, we're talking about the Holy Roman Empire at the time of the Reformation and what the Age of the Reformation was all about with Dr. Martin Nolan tomorrow on the program. He's from the Concordia Historical Institute. This is a series that we're doing this month based upon our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for October. Actually, two books. Volume 1 is the Reformation of the Renaissance Movement. Volume 2 is the Reformation Movement. These two books are really kind of the gold standard in a popular treatment of this era in the church's history and in the world's history, the Renaissance and Reformation movements. Now, you can have each volume for $23.99 apiece or both volumes together for $40.99, and you can order them from Concordia Publishing House by calling any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or you can go to our website, issuesetc.org, look under the What's New section, and you'll find the Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for October, called The Renaissance and Reformation Movements, issuesetc.org, or call 1-800-325-3040.
Senator Kerry, thousands of people have already been cured or treated by the use of adult stem cells or umbilical cord stem cells. However, no one has been cured by using embryonic stem cells. Wouldn't it be wise to use stem cells obtained without the destruction of an embryo?
You know, Elizabeth, I really respect your the feeling that's in your question. I understand it. I know the morality that's prompting that question, and I respect it enormously. But like Nancy Reagan and so many other people, you know, I was at a forum with Michael J. Fox the other day in New Hampshire, who's suffering from Parkinson's, and he wants us to do stem cell, embryonic stem cell. And this fellow stood up, and he was quivering. His whole body was shaking from the nerve disease, the muscular disease that he had. And he said to me and to the whole hall, he said, you know, don't take away my hope, because my hope is what keeps me going. Chris Reeve is a friend of mine. Chris Reeve exercises every single day to keep those muscles alive for the day when he believes he can walk again, and I want him to walk again. I think we can save lives. Now, I think we can do ethically guided embryonic stem cell research. We have 100,000 to 200,000 embryos that are frozen in nitrogen today from fertility clinics. These weren't taken from abortion or something like that. They're from a fertility clinic. And they're either going to be destroyed or left frozen. And I believe if we have the option, which scientists tell us we do, of curing Parkinson's, curing diabetes, curing paraplegic or quadriplegic or a spinal cord injury, anything. That's the nature of the human spirit. I think it is respecting life to reach for that cure. I think it is respecting life to do it in an ethical way. And the president's chosen a policy that makes it impossible for our scientists to do that. I want the future, and I think we have to grab it.
Mr. President, minute and a half.
Embryonic stem cell research requires the destruction of life to create a stem cell. I'm the first president ever to allow funding, federal funding, for embryonic stem cell research. I did so because I too hope that we'll discover cures from the stem cells, from the research derived. But I think we got to be very careful in balancing the ethics and the science. And so I'd made the decision we wouldn't spend any more money beyond the 70 lines, 22 of which are now in action. Because science is important, but so is ethics. So is balancing life. To destroy life, to save life, is one of the real ethical dilemmas that we face. There's going to be hundreds of experiments off the 22 lines that now exist that are active. And hopefully we find a cure. But as well, we need to continue to pursue adult stem cell research. I helped double the NIH budget to $28 billion a year to find cures. And the approach I took is one that I think is a balanced and necessary approach to balance science and the concerns for life.
Senator, 30 seconds, let's extend.
Well, you talk about walking a waffle line. He says he's allowed it, which means he's going to allow the destruction of life up to a certain amount, and then he isn't going to allow it. Now, I don't know how you draw that line. But let me tell you point blank, the lines of stem cells that he's made available, every scientist in the country will tell you, not adequate. Because they're contaminated by mouse cells, and because there aren't 60 or 70, there are only about 11 to 20 now, and there aren't enough to be able to do the research because they're contaminated. We've got to open up the possibilities of this research, and when I am president, I'm going to do it.
Senator.
Because we have to.
Yeah. Mr. President.
Let me make sure you understand my decision. Those stem cell lines already existed. The embryo had already been destroyed prior to my decision. I had to make the decision, do we destroy more life? Do we continue to destroy life? I made the decision to balance science and ethics.
Mr. President,
All right, that was President Bush and Senator Kerry in Friday's debate. What do you think? How did you think they did on their answers about embryonic stem cell research? The question, a previous caller pointed out, was a marvelous question. It basically said, because there's been success in adult and cord blood stem cell research and virtually no success in embryonic stem cell research, don't you think the money The government's money, the taxpayers' money, ought to go to adult stem cell research, the more fruitful of the two researches and the less ethically problematic of the two lines of research. It's a great question. What did you think of the answers? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Interestingly enough, I will simply observe, neither of the answers answered the question, who is the unborn in a particular way, although the president came closest by saying that embryonic stem cell research requires the destruction of life. And as we know in today's debate and parlance on the whole life issue, life is also variously defined. Paul is calling from St. Charles. Paul, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. Three quick points here, if I may. Kerry's point that he made about abortion with relation to it being an article of faith, and he made the point of not legislating morality. It really misses the point, in my view, because the question is not, is abortion an article of faith, or having a view against abortion, is that an article of faith, but is abortion the terminating of a human life? Is it murder? Because we already have existing laws against murder. So he seems to be missing the point. He doesn't go anywhere with that argument. Number two, when he spoke about ethically guided embryonic stem cell research, that seems like an oxymoron because unless he's talking about the existing lines, if he's talking about harvesting or taking embryos and destroying them to harvest stem cells, I mean, either you destroy the embryo or you don't. So the issue is, again, getting back to the life issue of the embryo. And third, when he was mentioning partial birth abortion and saying he was against that issue with respect to what the president has done because it didn't have the issue with saving the life of the mother, again, that seems like a red herring to me because that always seems to be what's first brought up by pro-choicers. And you know, it's interesting if next time you speak with a pro-choicer and they bring that up, just simply ask them, well, okay, well, I'll accept your view on that, and I'll say, fine, I'll agree. We will make exceptions for abortion to save the life of the mother. Are you content then with that? And they'll say, absolutely not, because actually what they want is this idea of having abortion on demand so they can have a frivolous or a lifestyle that, you know, is kind of freewheeling, so to speak, so that this doesn't... Cause, I mean, the real issue is that for many women, it's used as a form of birth control, and it simply interrupts their life. So... again, that's just a red herring, and I don't really know for a fact. I'm not any expert in this area, but I am aware of a quote that I had heard. Apparently, the former Surgeon General of the United States, Sierra Coopin, once said that it is never necessary to perform an abortion in order to save the life of the mother.
Before I let you go, any thoughts on the president's responses in the course of that interchange we played?
I thought, in general, they were good. I mean, one of your early callers critiqued him on the points of abortion. We can get far too idealistic, I think, and I mean, you simply have to throw your weight behind the president. I would like to see him be perhaps a little bit better informed on the issue of embryonic stem cell research because there's so much heat rather than light that when it comes up to this issue. In fact, I remember seeing a piece on CBS recently, and Senator Kerry did the same thing. It wasn't driven scientifically or by reason or information, but it was purely emotional. He referred to this man who was holding out hope. He said, don't take that hope. And there's no information in that. It's simply meant to elicit an emotion in a person.
That's what I thought about, and thank you so much, Paul. Very insightful comments. That's what I thought when he said, I respect the feeling behind your concern. And then... he responded with an alternate feeling, a feeling of sympathy for Michael J. Fox and Christopher Reeve. You see, if it's a matter of faith, then we can't legislate it because, of course, that would be imposing our religion on someone else. And if it's a matter of feeling, then, of course, people have alternate feelings about embryonic stem cell research. Michael J. Fox is all gung-ho about it. And don't take his hope away. A couple things on Kerry's comments I would point out. When he talked about 100,000 to 200,000 frozen embryos that are just sitting there waiting and otherwise would be destroyed or left, that's not accurate. Greg Kokel pointed out to us very recently that there may be 100,000 to 200,000 frozen embryos, but there are only 40,000 that are actually, in a technical sense, a legal sense, available for any kind of research. Only 40,000 that have actually been slated by the donors, by the parents. I don't know how something that isn't alive has parents, but for research. And, of course, he didn't deal with the distinction in his answer between embryonic and adult stem cell research, unless I missed something. What about you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Lois is up next, calling in St. Louis. Hi, Lois.
Hello. I just want to thank you for taking my call. I'm calling, too, in regard to Senator Kerry's remark about the man who was quivering and said, "Don't take my hope away." Well, you know, nobody can take away our hope that is ours in Jesus Christ, and he is the only hope we have. If only for this life we have hope, we are the most miserable of people.
Very good. Very good thought, Lois.
Thank you.
Very good thought. What did you make of this whole issue? Paul raised this, and that is doing embryonic stem cell research under strict ethical guidelines. Now, if it isn't wrong to do it, why do you need ethical guidelines? I want to go mow my lawn. Would my wife ever say, "Wait, before you go, honey, mow your lawn under the strictest ethical guidelines"? I say, "Well, is there something wrong? Is there something potentially wrong about how I might mow my lawn?" Well, for things, if there is no ethical pitfall here, if there is no immorality involved in embryonic stem cell research, why in the world would you be able to conduct it? Or would you have to conduct it under the strictest of ethical guidelines? It doesn't seem to make any sense. Paul pointed out when he called that it doesn't make sense in another respect, and that is either you destroy the embryo or you don't. Now, if not destroying the embryo is the ethical thing to do, and destroying the embryo is the unethical thing to do, it would seem that the strictest of ethical guidelines would rule out of bounds in its entirety embryonic stem cell research. It's Open Lines, Issues, etc. 15 minutes left for your phone calls, getting your reaction and your commentary on these two questions posed and answered during the presidential debate Friday night at Washington University, one on partial birth abortion, on abortion legislation and tax funding for abortion. It went in all those directions, and the other for embryonic stem cell research. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Car phone callers, first-time callers, and internet callers are given top priority. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Think about this. And this is going back to Senator Kerry's comment about a 16 or 17-year-old girl being raped by her father. He was answering, in this part of his answer, he was talking about parental notification, why he voted against a bill that had parental notification. He said, "I don't want to force a 16 or 17-year-old girl who has been raped by her father to notify her father before," and he didn't actually say it, "but before she has an abortion." Now, when I heard that, I thought, now that is an appeal to the extremist of cases, isn't it? He not only got rape in there, he got incest in there, in one fell swoop, raped by her father, rape and incest in one thing, an extreme case. Let's look at it this way, this appeal to the extreme case that can become a very flawed argument. Let's say for the sake of argument that I'm a sociopath and I want to shoot people in my home. I have the courtesy of inviting them over or leaving the door open so they happen to walk in, but I want to be able to shoot people in the privacy of my own home. Now you say to me, you shouldn't be allowed to shoot people in your own home. Now here's my response, an appeal to the extreme case. What if that person in my home is a robber? Or a murderer intent upon doing me harm? Oh, well, then you ought to be able to defend yourself and shoot the person in your home. Does that mean that I should be allowed to shoot anyone in my home? You see, the appeal to the extreme case is saying if there is some circumstance under which it might, and I stress the word might, be permissible to do a thing, then we should permit it in all circumstances. That is essentially what Senator Kerry was arguing. If we should not require a girl, 16 or 17-year-old, raped by her father to notify her father before she has an abortion, then we shouldn't allow anyone to notify their parents. We shouldn't require anyone to notify their parents whenever they have an abortion. And I would say, here I'm the sociopath who wants to shoot people in my own home. Hey, if you will allow me the exception of shooting someone who's a murderer or a robber who's coming to my home illegally, then you have to allow me to shoot everyone who comes into my home, because the extreme case would dictate that every circumstance would allow me to shoot people in my own home. It doesn't make any sense, does it? Well, those who argue for abortion as a general right, for abortion on demand based upon the extremist of cases, and I don't even want to allow the extreme exceptions, but if they argue on the basis of the extremist of cases, they're saying the exception should dictate the rule, which kind of turns the whole distinction between exception and rule on its head, don't you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Bob is calling from his car. Bob, welcome.
Thank you. My question is, what should be done with those frozen embryos? Shouldn't something be done to give them a reasonable life? It seems that if they're in the control of parents, shouldn't the state take them away from those parents and make sure that efforts are made to find women who are willing to have them implanted so they can be born, so they can have a reasonable human life?
Absolutely. Bob, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Let's say, for the sake of argument, using Senator Kerry's numbers at the high extreme, 200,000 frozen embryos. Now, let's say there are only 40,000 of those who've actually been signed off for research. And they're being, actually, private money is being used here. We're only arguing about whether or not government money is going to be used in this research. So we have got 160,000 frozen embryos. What should be done with them? I think Bob is correct here. We need to find homes for these children. In fact, we were talking recently with Greg Kokel, and he made the point of pointing out that he and his wife had recently adopted embryos from an in vitro fertilization clinic. And we're going through the in vitro process with these embryos that they had adopted to bring these children to full term. It can be done. What should we not do? We should not leave them in frozen limbo. While that may be better than killing them, it's still not what we're capable of. We should not say, well, you know, if they're just going to go to waste, let's use them for research. That's kind of like walking through a city and saying, look at all these orphans around here. I mean, they don't have any parents. No one wants them. We might as well just use them for hamburger. I mean, someone ought to benefit from this, right? You say there's no comparison between the frozen embryo and orphans on the street. You tell me the difference between a child in a test tube and a child on the street. You tell me the real qualitative difference between the two. Anybody. Anne is calling from Crestwood. Anne, thank you for waiting. Welcome to Issues, etc.
Oh, thank you very much. First of all, I was raised Catholic, too, and I was taught that the end never justifies the means, but Mr. Kerry doesn't seem to have learned that from his education. And as far as partial birth abortion, why would that ever be necessary? If abortion is going to be legal, I mean, I think men on death row suffer less when they're put to death with an injection. Do they have to torture the child in this way? It's some Frankenstein that came up with that. And the last thing I wanted to say is I think President Bush very much needs Issues, etc. Thank you.
Well, Anne, before I let you go, oh, she's gone. I wonder why President Bush needs Issues. Maybe he's for a better primer on the subject. I don't know. Folks, I am not a genius. And I'm no expert. I've had the benefit of sitting here behind this microphone for the last 5 years, for hours on end, talking on a very regular basis about these issues with people who do know what they're talking about. See, I'm not even the president. I'm not even running for president. These really are the issues that are probably, arguably, the most important long-term. We could talk about the war on terrorism, the economy. Those things will come and go. Believe me, they will come and go. But these issues are long-term, and they are the ethical issues that remain at the top of the burner. I think any candidate for president, whether he's already president or hoping to be president, it doesn't take much, I'll tell you, to bring yourself up to speed on these issues. I would like to have heard the president be a little, well, I don't know how well informed he was. It may have been a matter of being able to articulate what he knew about these issues. I would like to have seen him deal with the central question. And that central question we've talked so much about on this program, whether it's embryonic stem cell research, whether it's abortion, The central question is, who is the unborn? He came close when he talked about embryonic stem cell research requiring the destruction of life. But let's put it, we can't just talk about life in general. People love to talk about life. Oh, life is wonderful. And when they picture life, they picture a budding flower or a wind blowing through the trees. That's not the kind of life we're talking about. Someone mentioned this to me yesterday, that when they saw the images from the latest sonogram technology that allows a 3D computer image of the unborn to be displayed on a screen, when my wife and I had our kids and we had the sonogram done, what we saw looked like a map of Siberia. Although if we watched with our eyes kind of squinted, we could see enough movement and discern enough things that we realized what we were seeing was our children in the womb. Well, now the technology of the sonogram literally opens a window into the womb where we can see babies. We can see them as they really are, not just as vague outlines, but in all of their contours, all of their shape, all their movement in real time. We need to force the question from our politicians, from our preachers, from everyone who claims to be pro-life, from everyone who claims to be pro-choice. We need to force the question, who is the unborn? Who are you looking at when you see that astounding image staring back at you from inside the womb? Joe is calling from his car. Joe, our time is short.
Hi, Todd. I thought President Bush was almost heading in the right direction when he mentioned the Dred Scott case in connection with the abortion issue, because it's a case about the subjugation of the rights of one class of human beings to the rights of another, which legally is what abortion's all about. And he started in that direction, yeah. And he didn't finish it.
I was amazed when he started, because I thought, my goodness, he must have been talking to the right people. Thank you, Joe. He must have been talking to the right people on this. And then, I don't know if something distracted him. I don't quite remember what happened. But it was gone. As quickly as it appeared, it was gone. You're right, Joe. Headed in the right direction to answering the central question, who is the unborn? In the Dred Scott decision, the question was posed, who is the black man? Now, in Supreme Court decisions, that was wrongly answered. Who is the black man? What, two-fifths, three-fifths of a person for voting purposes? Eventually, the Supreme Court justices got their heads on straight. Who is the black man? The black man is a man. Who is the unborn? The unborn is, well, it's who you used to be. It's who I used to be. The unborn is a person, a fully human person. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.